Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod. Don't pick up the phone. I'm Jason Horton.
I'm Rebecca Lieb.
And this is Ghost Town.
Worked at Marrakesh Restaurant in the 80s and 90s, you knew the call. You didn't know who they were or what they wanted. Only that, in a squeaky voice, a childlike tone, or a bad Middle Eastern accent, that they wanted you destroyed. Because of the bizarre nature of this voice, a voice that would call up to 20 times a day, employees of Marrakesh and their fearless leader, manager Bashir Khoshakji, called the voice l'enfant, French for the child. But what this caller did wasn't childlike, to say the least. It was a calculated act of terror. Today on Ghost Town, the case of l'enfant. In 1974, Bashir Khoshakji and his wife lived in Beirut, Lebanon. She was a professional singer who entertained at the esteemed yet controversial Phoenicia Hotel, a meeting place for Middle Eastern diplomats and arms dealers. Bashir was a restaurateur himself, though not so well known at the time. At 11:30 on July 1st, 1974, Bashir was outside of a large residence, waiting to pick up his wife from a women-only party thrown by a Saudi princess. Bashir had agreed to pick her up at 11:30, but at that time, she did not appear outside. After waiting till 1 a.m., Bashir decided that he had likely gotten the address wrong and left. According to the LA Times, this is what happened next. Quote, turning the corner, he found his way blocked by a small vehicle. Four men with machine guns jumped out. They dragged him out of his Mercedes, bound him, threw him into their auto, and drove away. 15 minutes later, Khoshakji found himself inside a Palestinian refugee camp. He was actually relieved. He had feared that his kidnappers were robbers, but now they would learn that he was a non-political person, and neither an Arab or a Jew, and would quickly clear up a case of mistaken identity. His captors had other ideas. They asked his identity but refused to accept his explanations, and he was thrown into a windowless basement with only one light and a blanket on the floor. Over the next 5 days, he was interrogated every 2 hours, beaten severely and threatened by an endless series of men and young boys waving automatic weapons in his face. On his 5th day of capture, Bashir began to hallucinate, hearing screams from his family members. Convinced he was going to die, he tried to end his life by taking a small plastic bowl and scratching his wrist repeatedly with it. Tearing away at the cut with his teeth, he opened a large wound. Eventually, his captors found him lying in a pool of blood. They rushed him to the hospital, where a doctor patched him up. While in the hospital, Bashir managed to contact his mother through a sympathetic orderly. She alerted the American embassy of what was happening, and along with the Lebanese government, the two factions interceded on Bashir's behalf and obtained his release. State Department documents that Khoshakji later obtained indicate that he was kidnapped by a rogue faction of the PLO, which mistakenly believed that he was a CIA agent, a foreign man driving a Mercedes-Benz with Belgian plates in a rich neighborhood late at night. It was, in essence, a big, traumatizing mistake. A mistake that would change this man's life. Bashir struggled with paranoia and guilt, thinking other people believed he had done something wrong. He became convinced that people thought he was an agent of some sort. His mental state ruined his marriage, and later that year he moved to Los Angeles, where he became the manager of Dar Maghreb restaurant on Sunset Boulevard. Then he moved to Atlantic City to manage another restaurant. In 1977, Bashir moved to Philadelphia, where he and his sister opened the first Marrakesh restaurant. The restaurant became very successful, so they opened another in Northwest D.C. But through all of this, Bashir's paranoia did not go away. In his own way, however that way would be, he wanted to clear his name. Says Khushakji of the time, quote, "I thought maybe by managing an Arabic restaurant in a city with all those Arab diplomats, I will clear myself with the Arabic community." But then the calls began. A phone was installed in the DC Marrakesh during construction, and this phone would ring, and when answered, nobody was on the line. When the answering machine was eventually hooked up, Bashir found messages consisting of weird laughter and tisk-tisk sounds. The calls escalated when the DC Marrakesh restaurant finally opened, and a voice began making an appearance on the line. The voice demanded money, threatened death, screamed vulgarities, and eviscerated whomever was on the other line. Again, all of this in a very strange and varied accent. In the mid to late 80s, when the calls were at their height, the voice would have a range of identities. A young girl, a small child, adults with strange Middle Eastern accents. They called the caller l'enfant, French for the child, because of these strange voices, so childlike in their innocence, yet malicious in their intent to harm. Employees came and went, but l'enfant did not go away, terrorizing the restaurant's culture. One employee even checked into a hospital for a month based on nervous tension from these calls. And then, of course, there was Bashir, plagued already by his kidnapping, and now this. According to an agreement made with the phone company, the restaurant maintained records of the harassing calls. They are, according to the LA Times, chilling in their frequency. On July 14th, 1987, for example, calls came in at 9:53 a.m. twice, 9:54 a.m. twice, 11:23 a.m., 11:24 a.m., 11:32 a.m., 1:19 p.m., 1:32 p.m., 2 p.m., 3:12 p.m., 4:12 p.m. twice, 4:13 p.m., 4:16 p.m., 4:58 p.m., and 9:25 p.m. Of course, harassment triggered PTSD in Bashir over and over again, and he was again convinced that someone was out to get him. And it wasn't all in his head, or even confined to one telephone line. Bashir's Mercedes was found with giant Stars of David scratched into it. When he would visit the Marrakesh sister restaurant in D.C., the calls would follow him. When he came back to Philadelphia, the calls would follow him there. As soon as he walked into any of his restaurants, the phone felt like it was about to ring. And often, it did. He could not escape. In 1987, Bashir checked into the psychiatric ward of Silby Memorial Hospital, and he has been in and out ever since. Of course, police were also in on the mix, as was the phone company. Chesapeake and Potomac Telephone Company and the FBI put a trace on the line for more than 2 years, beginning in May 1988 to 1990, but they failed to identify the caller. The only thing they did know was that a large number of payphones in the Washington metropolitan area were involved, an indication that there was some kind of organized plot. And yet, the identity of L'Enfant is still unknown, and the case, at least in terms of FBI involvement, is formally closed. Quote, "At some point you have to make a judgment call," says Frank Scafidi, an FBI spokesperson. "Is it worth the money to continue the investigation because you have more harassing situation or more a threatening one?" Even today, almost a decade after the thousands of phone calls began, no one at the Marrakesh restaurant knows or knew who L'Enfant is. All they know is nearly every day from 1983 to 1988, someone, and perhaps more than one person, has called this popular Moroccan spot and harassed, incessantly harassed, its employees. It's estimated that L'Enfant made over 7,000 abusive phone calls in this period. In 1990, Khushakji won $436,000 in a workers' compensation judgment from his insurer because the nature of his job, which involved a lot of being on the phone, was the cause of his illness. Because of his mental state, Bashir decided to fight back against L'Enfant and build back up his reputation. Bashir placed a series of ads in the Sunday opinion sections of the Washington Post and the Washington Times. Most of the ads feature a large USA headline, with copy leaning towards exhortative political homilies on the order of, quote, "Only the United States can ensure that this new world order will be truly responsive to the rights and needs of the oppressed." The ads, controversial of course, cost about $13,000 each. Bashir describes them as, quote, "therapeutic, but says they also fulfilled his agenda. Quote, "The only way I can go back to work is if I leave behind a trail of notoriety. It puts everybody on the spot if something happens. I'm telling the terrorists, listen, Bashir is an important person in Washington. He's known." And the phone calls? According to the LA Times, Khashoggi thinks he might have seen some faces during those days in Lebanon that he was not meant to see. The calls and harassment might have been a warning that he should keep quiet. Now, I say the calls mostly happened during a four-year period, but I also want to emphasize that the calls didn't completely stop until the mid-90s. Quote, "This L'Enfant should have grown up by now," says a longtime employee of the restaurant who received many of these calls. But it's the same voice. A voice that likely haunts tens, if not hundreds of people who have made their way through Marrakesh Restaurant, but especially Bashir Khashoggi, who I hope eventually finds some justice against L'Enfant and a little bit of peace.